Hello. Now, if I speak like this, can anyone hear me?
Yep.
Is that you, Karen? So now, so let's try that again.
Hello, Peter.
Yes, hello.
This is Alan Bishop.
Oh, hello, Alan. Are you here because you're for the conference? The Red
Yeah.
Bank? Oh, well done.
I'm coming in by telephone just so it didn't clog up the computer. So.
Oh, okay.
That's Katie's laugh.
Yeah.
Hello, Kate.
Hello.
Karen, was that you who could hear via the phone? Who was it that could hear?
Yes, I can hear via the phone.
Which phone number did you ring?
The 1-300 one that was posted up by Renee earlier.
Oh, okay, the 1-800 one?
Yep, the 1-800 one.
Yeah, that's what I used.
Okay. Welcome to join us.
Someone else has joined us.
So, starting from the top of the list, can I just say a name, and then if you can hear me, you just say yes. Ali? Angela? Oh, okay. Okay, Angela says she can hear music. Carol?
Yes.
Christine?
Yes.
Debbie?
Yes.
Okay. Debbie Long?
Debbie Long, yes.
Jennifer Dawes? Karen Choi?
Yes.
Hey, Tracy?
Yes, so you're quite faint.
Oh, okay, well, I think it's... I'll talk loud because we've only got a mobile phone here.
Oh.
So, it's because I had a commitment somewhere else. Okay, so we've actually got some people and not others. Those people who are connected, did you do that by entering the instructions that you were given where you went the 1-800 number followed by the passcode 9-1-0-3-7-2-9-2?
Yes. 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 Right, so, okay. I'm going to send another message. She's wrong that one. She's just an awful roll. What? You're trying.
Okay. someone else getting into the phone conversation. We might actually get started with the process, given that we only have a limited amount of time. Now, I need to have some apologies. I need to apologise for the fact that I've got a bit of a cold, so I might have coughing fits periodically, but I do have cough lollies with me to do this. And the second thing is how delighted I am that so many people take an interest in this form of communication. So it'll be really interesting to see how it works. I think if you want to contact me, I will be able to hear if you say something. But if you want to say, ask a question for everybody, maybe type it into that text box. See what that word. But please feel free to say it
Can I just interrupt, Peter? If we type it into the text box, how do we send it to you?
Just press return.
Oh, okay. Simple as that. No worries.
Yeah. In fact, I can see now that Angela is typing something now.
Okay. Right. Yep.
And so I don't. Can you see that? Can everyone see that Angela is typing something?
Yep. Can see that.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Just
like that work. Okay. So this the title is probably also a little bit. And so Renee is here with me, as is Louise Hudson, but this is Peter Sullivan, who's actually involved. Don't ask. The title is about culturally responsive pedagogies for mathematics teaching. And I now realise that the title might be slightly ambitious, but let's keep going. When I put a slide up, I'm not going to read through it. I'll just let you read through it for yourself.
Peter?
Yeah?
It's Katie here. I don't have internet access at the moment, but I'm on the phone, obviously. Are you able to read it to me, to read it out?
So, look, let me do that. So, the curriculum for Australian students is intended to be inclusive of all students, whatever their cultural background. But this does not mean that all students will be taught the same way. The important challenge for teachers is to explore pedagogy which all students are comfortable, especially those which acknowledge preferred learning and communication styles and cultural expectations of Indigenous students. So the webinar will outline some of these pedagogies, especially communicating high expectations through the use of age-appropriate experiences that are appropriate to build connections between mathematical ideas, and recognising the relationship between language and learning and using unfamiliar ideas and language places on students. So that was that slide. Now, I have a slide here which is an attempt at saying what I think some culturally responsive pedagogies might be. So, and I'm going to be interested in, once I do this, I'll actually pause to see if people want to comment and disagree. So, I think that one of the important things is increasing student decision-making, meaning they're not just passive recipients of information, but have opportunity, in a sense, to create the knowledge for themselves. But give students time. That it's not gaping over the top of ideas, but spending time on particular content and structuring the lesson so that the students have time. That the desired actions, and whether the action is measuring or multiplying or, you know, opening a spreadsheet or whatever, that those are modelled by teachers, so that the teacher is actually modelling the processes. Communications, you might... I was actually just distracted by reading some of the text. It does. You might say that goes without saying, but you'd be surprised at the number of people who, at the end of their secondary school, had been, you know, quite severely abused by a math teacher at one stage or another. I'm just going to make a note for the people who can't hear anything. Okay, so.
Can't hear anything. I'll have to.
Who are just logging in. So hopefully the people who previously can't hear anything can, or people who can just hear.
Other one. We're waiting for a few more people to
show up. Do you want to ring the assistant?
Get connected. Some people can't hear.
So that's the number. Hi, it's Sharon London here. Can I ask if people can mute their phones if they're not talking? Because I'm hearing a huge amount of ambient noise and Peter's very quiet.
Okay, so...
Yeah, but then I can't hear the webinar.
It's okay. Stop breathing. Yeah, she's right. They'll cope.
So, for the people who are yeah, so thanks Sharon for that very wise tip. The other people can start to come in with. Now, who was that just joined us?
Hello, this is Luke.
Hi Luke, how are you going?
Good, how are you?
Good. Are you just coming for the first time?
Sorry?
You just joined
us. I can't hear you too well. Can you say that again?
Oh, are you joining us now?
I am. Yeah, I've been trying to get online through the internet, but it's just hasn't been working, so I thought I'd give the telephone a call, a try.
Oh, okay. All right,
good.
Anyway, look, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy just to listen in.
I was assuming that we'd stop and talk about the culturally responsive pedagogies, but I'm going to keep going. It's in contrast to approaches that lie on the feature telling. So it does actually talk about a different approach to teaching. Now, I'm hoping, by the way, I've now picked up the phone, so with a bit of luck, this will actually be easier for me to use. I'm going to keep going. I was invited to answer some questions for some people who are doing work on literacy and numeracy, and I was asked to say, what do I see as the most critical aspect of being a powerful learner of numeracy and literacy? Now, the reason I put that is that I've just been doing some work with someone who's analysing NAPLAN results, and particularly for Indigenous kids. And what they found was that Indigenous kids, now, by the way, this is Victorian data, so they're going to be generally people who are going to school in in schools that are culturally mixed with both Indigenous and non-Indigenous students in more or less every class. What they found was that Indigenous kids did as well as non-Indigenous kids on the easy question, but they didn't do as well on the moderate and hard questions. And so I think that the concept of power being a powerful learner is actually something that may well apply to this culturally responsive idea. And my suggestion is that powerful learners connect ideas together, they can compare and contrast concepts, they can transfer learning from one context to another, they devise their own solutions and they explain their thinking to others. And the point about that is that, I'm not sure what the opposite of powerful learner is, but it seems like this has to be a goal for all students. We find ways to connect them to the powerful learner. I was also asked to comment on how does one recognise a powerful learner. Now, if we were face-to-face, I'd pause at this stage to hear some of your suggestions. But in this case, I would say powerful learners are willing to persist. They see failure as an opportunity to learn. They do take risks. They contribute their ideas and listen to the contributions of others. So these are characteristics of this. And what conditions and or practices best promote engagement? I think that we have to talk about not just individuals. There's so much in terms of current education policy that focuses on the individual. But I think we have to start talking about what can create a supportive classroom community and how can we get to build those, in which students work on tasks and encourage them to connect ideas, make their own decisions. Part of this is the teachers have to differentiate the tasks so that they're challenging for most, they're adapted for those experiences, they're prepared for those.
Hello.
Oh, hello, who was that?
Oh, no, that's me. Sorry, it's Christine here. I just thought it dropped out, but we're right. Keep going. Sorry to interrupt.
That's actually much better.
I'm going to skip over this slide and to start to talk about some experiences that I've had that could form the basis. It's actually, if I can just remind people to mute your phone if you're not going to talk, and we may have to do the talking through this text thing. By the way, it's slightly complicated because I've got to read my own slides and try and monitor the text. But anyway, this was a lesson I taught actually in a remote Indigenous school last week. And the teacher had said that the grade 2 class was starting on a raised of multiplication. We started with a task that suggested that the students arrange 12 counters in some sort of pattern. And so the students arranged them, and then I covered up their arrangement and asked them to describe their pattern to the rest of the students in the class for them to make. Then they made other patterns, and the idea was just to get students to create patterns of arrays that they could talk about. Then the intention was we're going to play the game. Now, the way the game's played is not a set of dots. We might roll two dice. Say we rolled a 3 and a 4. Well, then we might loop a set of, a 3 times 4 or a 4 times 3 array, whichever way your eyes read that. And then the next part of the task was that the students write the total of the number of dots inside the array in there. The point about this lesson was that I taught the lesson completely without talking. And so it was just a process of modelling what was needed with the students watching what I was doing, and I actually had the class teacher playing the game as well, and together we played the game, and once the students understood the rules, they simply drifted away to start playing. So, and even then, there was no talking. And so the game might continue, for example, so that if we had, this time we still, the first 12 was there, this time 6 times 2, so we might have an array that's 6 times 2 or 2 times 6, however you see that, and that would be the second person. And just to make the point of the worksheet, the quality of the work that the kids did was really extraordinary. It's really quite a common game, but I'm not sure whether this is going to work. Can you see I'm pointing to an array in this case, which was 1 by 1? Anyone?
I don't see you pointing. Pardon me.
Oh, okay. Well, so in the middle of the page, I know. Yeah, the top third of the page, but in the middle of the page. There's an array drawn which is 1 by 1. Mm-hmm. Now, the point about that is that that's one of the things that the students find really complex because they're used to seeing a 1 by 1 and adding 2 and making it 2. So what it means is that these kids were actually playing the game exactly as they wanted, even though there'd been no talking. There was only been modelling of the process. So you can see that the quality of the work that the kids have done is really quite outstanding. And I stress that these are kids in a really remote part of Australia, not on mainland Australia, not Tasmania either, but... and that these kids have played, and they even adapted the game to saying that they were going to add the totals up to see who got the highest total of the number of dots that are covered. And so I think you can see that this, as a pedagogy, is a process that has potential to allow the people to focus. Now, I hope this is not offensive to any particular group of people, but I was in a taxi the other day that was a Ford, and the taxi driver put the taxi in reverse to do a U-turn, and the radio went off. And the point, I asked whether this was something that was idiosyncratic to his car or whether it was applied to all Fords, and he said no, it applies to all Fords. So what it means is that the people who make Fords think that Ford drivers can't both reverse the car and listen to the radio. It's actually about the cognitive load, and so that, in a sense, that's what we're talking about when we're trying to model a game or a process like this. If we can reduce the cognitive load, it has very great potential to engage the students in the task. Does anyone want to make a comment or ask a question? I'll just pause and grab a cough lolly.
Pardon me, I'm just curious. I'm not quite sure I understand how these patterns came about. I mean, I understand that you weren't speaking and the young children weren't speaking or contributing in that way, but were just playing along. I'm not quite sure. So how was it, did you just go ahead and did you ask them to just listen or to just watch, or how exactly did that come about?
The question was, I should know, did other people hear that question, by the way?
Yes.
Oh,
yes. Sorry, it was a bit staticky on my phone, so I apologize if you're repeating something you've already talked about.
Oh, no, I just didn't know whether other people heard your question or not. I did. I've just gone back a few slides. So, and I didn't make it, please excuse me for coffee, but right now to get more water for me. The game's played by rolling 2 dice, and if, for example, the player rolls a 6 and a 2, then what they do is they loop, two lots of 6 or 6 lots of 2, whichever way you want to say it, and so that becomes their turn. So if they'd rolled 3 times 4, it would have been a different shape, and so then So what this represents is that the students just having it in turns, in this case, someone with a green pen and someone with a blue pen, just having it in turns of recording their solutions, their strategies. Okay, so any other questions or comments? Well, the question from Louise that you may not have heard is, did they have to complete the whole grid to complete the game? Well, I didn't actually play it as a competitive game, but you certainly could do it that way. The last person to go was the winner, or you could use this one that these kids have done where they've had the total. Now, Kay has actually asked, did the students see this or link this with multiplication? Now, I'm not 100% certain. I think had I been a better teacher, I would have paused periodically to maybe engender a discussion about where did that 15 come from? Where did that 16 come from? You know, where did the 25? Why going, you know, 6 one way and 5 the other for to get that 30? We might have had that discussion, and then we might have had a bit of a discussion about 6 lots of 5 and 5 lots of 6 as a way of generating. It does highlight, Kay, that, and everyone, that we do have to find a way to turn games like this into learning experiences. And so... I guess the kids, that was just an unusual situation because it wasn't really like a planned lesson, but it was just trying to make the point that it's possible to communicate even quite complicated game rules without talking. And it may well be in some cases that actually facilitates the learning process. I'm going to skip over the issue. I want to give another one of the aspects of this, the point I'm trying to make about the culturally responsive pedagogies, is that they have to be respectful of the notion of challenge and treating the students like they can do age-appropriate challenging tasks which engage them in connecting ideas together. Now, I've chosen a topic from, if you like, the middle years fractions curriculum. That's what you can see on the screen now is what the Australian curriculum says about this particular aspect of fractions. This is meant to be an example of a lesson that we can discuss subsequently. So in this case, I would say to the students that we want them to realise that a fraction's a number. And we can use fractions just like we use numbers. But I also explain to them that it's a problem that I'm going to want them to work out for themselves and to talk about it and think about how we can explain their reasoning. So here's the task. Could you maybe just on a piece of paper on the side just solve that task, please? Oh, so I'd forgotten about some people are just on the audio. What we have is a square that's been divided vertically into two parts. One half is shaded red. The other part has been divided horizontally in half and then half again. And one of those fractions, let's call it an eighth of the whole square or a quarter of the left-hand side, has been shaded blue. And the question is, if the blue rectangle represents two-thirds, what fraction is represented by the red rectangle? Boy, this is going to look when it's recorded. But I'm not sure. Would anyone like to have a go at describing their answer to this? So, Karen, would you like to just talk us through how you got eight-thirds? Can you hear Karen?
Oh, sorry. Do you want me to speak instead? So since the red triangle is 4 times the blue triangle, if you just take it to the other side and you can just see that you can place 4 pieces. So if each one is 2/3, then I know that I can multiply by 4, which gives me 8/3. Or you can just keep adding 2 with 2 with 2 with 2. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So that's a really nice explanation. And that's what I guess we would hope that the students would do. Now, what are the issues associated with this? Well, suppose we wanted to teach that lesson. What might we like to think about? Now, for example, we might think about, well, what is the path that might get the students into this in the easier way? The point, by the way, about the task is that they get to see the 2/3 as a number, and that a fraction is not just a part, coloured in part of a shape, but it's actually a number that we can manipulate with other numbers. So, in this case, we could make the task one step easier if we needed to for some students. If the blue rectangle represents a half, what fraction is represented by the red rectangle? Maybe we could even make it simpler again for the students who are not familiar with fractions. If the blue rectangle represents 4, what number is represented by the red rectangle? So again, we'd use Karen's working out, but this time it's just with whole numbers. But of course, there might be some students who finish the task in the first place. And so maybe we could make it more complicated. If the blue rectangle represents 4/7, what fraction is represented by the red rectangle? And so even though we haven't changed the context or the complexity of the task, we've actually changed the levels at which students can access it. Now, we might even go on to another task for the students to consolidate their learning, where we might say, well, now the blue rectangle represents 1/2, what fraction is represented by the red rectangle? Probably that should say what number is represented by the red rectangle. Okay. I'm just going to pause as much for me to have a rest as anything else. Does anyone want to ask a question? Either through the audio or in writing. So, I'm guessing not. Okay, look, I'll keep going. If we were face to face, I'd stare you down now and make questions, but. And I actually presented that task as an example of the sort of task that I think that we can all any grade 5 students that we want to actually create the impression to them that we have high expectations, and that is we expect them to be able to engage with these tasks. And the point is that we feel that learning will be more